That is the best introduction I've had in a long time. Thank you very much, Mark. I have a burning passion about what we're going to talk about today because it has to do with each and every one of us taking personal responsibility for keeping money in our pocket and our identities safe. And in this day and age, we are seeing data theft and hacking at a level that none of us have experienced and most of us have a hard time wrapping our heads around. That there are literally right now rooms two or three times bigger than this full of cubicles and workstations with people at computers trying to figure out how to get your name, your phone number, your address, your social security number, your date of birth, your bank account information, your credit card information. It is an industry. So I'd like to say that we have a target on us, and as individuals and as businesses. And those targets are 24/7. They're working around the clock because we live in this global society. And the data centers are humming, the computers are humming, and they're constantly working, trying to get into our pocketbooks. So we're all wearing a target. We've seen these just recently in the Boise Valley. I'm going to share a lot of stories with you this morning. The thing is this is not something outside of Idaho. We can't sit here and say, well, we're in Idaho, we're safe, nobody's looking at us, the people in India, the people in China, the people in Europe, they're not watching us. No, Idaho's a target. So the CEO of Amalgamated Sugar, are you in the room by any chance? Okay. Had his email hacked. The hacker then sent in a message to HR saying, hey, I need all of the W-2s for our employees. Zip them up. Send them to me. What do most employees want to do? They want to please the boss. So guess what? All of that information, names, addresses, social security numbers. I mean, you think about your W-2. If you haven't done your taxes yet, it's a good idea to get that done as quickly as possible. We'll talk a little bit about that. But all that information now in the hands of the scam artists, the thieves. And I received a call from one of the employees at Amalgamated Sugar. She works there seasonally. And she said, it has started. I said, what? What has started? She said, the phone calls. Well, what kind of phone calls? Well, now the scam artists are impersonating those coming to help after the event and looking for even more information. If we can confirm your social security number, if we can confirm your bank account information, we'll start watching your accounts closely to be sure that you won't be victimized further by this data loss. And the scam artists have these scripts literally in front of them. They're working out of call centers making these phone calls. And so they've got a list of names that have been stolen, and they're following up with phone calls. And they are ingenious about how they will pull this off and get even more information from you. So Emily Blah is our marketplace director. She's in the back of the room and writes for the Idaho Statesman. She had this article recently about what's been happening there, and we'll continue to see this unfold. It's not over yet, and it's not the only business. There's one other story. I've got a friend who owns a company, and he sent me an email, and he said, look what happened to us. Somebody had hacked his email, watched his inbox to see who was paying bills, and figured out a way. The scam artist sent a fake invoice to accounts payable and along with a note from the CEO in the CEO's name from his email account, because the hacker had hacked in and gained access to the email account. Said, hey, I just hired this consultant over the weekend. Really important that we pay him the $14,000 fee as soon as possible. It all happened over the weekend. I need to get this done quick. If you have to, go ahead and wire the money. What do employees want to do? Please the boss. So what'd she do? She went to the bank. She said, listen, I need to wire $14,000 to this company back on the East Coast. The bank said, I'll tell you what, we're going to let you wire $7,000 to start with. This looks a little fishy. Cut it in half. They started trying to wire the $7,000. All of a sudden, everything started to unravel as this the CEO and accounts payable had a conversation, and he said, I never did send you an email. I never did tell you to pay a bill. And fortunately, they were able to intervene and stop the initial 7 from going, but it could have been as high as 14. So if you have a business like that, if you're in business, all you have to do is get an email that says, hey, there's a document waiting from an attorney, from a real estate agent, and as you click on that email and it tells you, oh, you're getting into your Google, your Gmail account, enter your password, you enter your name and your password, you have just given access to your entire email account to the scam artist. And that scam is circulating all the time. So it's all about how do we watch and monitor and be careful. And really, it's to a point where we've got to be suspicious about every single thing in our inbox, every single phone call we have, every single person who comes in the door, that you need to have a level of suspicion about what's going on because of how rampant this is, and just 2 stories recently. So, we're going to play a little game, and the game is called Have You Ever? Now, this is really easy. It's impossible to lose this game. But I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and just raise your hand. And as you raise your hand, look around the room and see who else is raising your hand. And I promise by the time we're done with this little game, everyone will have raised their hand. So, have you ever gone to a doctor or a dentist? Okay, I'm right there with you. How many of you own a business? Okay. How many of you have a social media account? And how many of you have hired a CPA or a bookkeeping service? Okay. So, did anyone not raise your hand? We're all there. All right, look at your neighbor and say, there's a really good chance you're the victim of identity theft. We laugh, but it's happening so often around us. I'm gonna take you through a series of stories that align with each of those points that have happened in the last 2 weeks. Okay, so the first, I asked, have you ever gone to a doctor? Well, Virginia Commonwealth University Health System is telling 2,700 people that they're there and their minor child's electronic medical records were inappropriately accessed over a 3-year period by employees. They finally found it this past January 10th, just released it a few days ago to the public, and now they're in the process of trying to make whole all of these people who had their records released. The next story is, I asked you if you've ever owned a business. Well, millions of records from a commercial corporate database that most of us have heard about, Dun & Bradstreet, 52-gigabyte file. If you know hard drives, that's 33.7 million unique email addresses and contact information from employees of thousands of companies. If you raised your hand when I asked if you owned a business, there's a really good chance that all of your information is in the Dun & Bradstreet database and is now in the hands of someone else. I asked if you owned a social media account. In this one, thousands of high-profile Twitter accounts have been spewing swastikas and spam following the hack of a popular third-party Twitter service. Once again, untold number of people impacted by this one. I asked if you've ever hired a CPA or a bookkeeping service. February 17th, it was discovered by a forensic IT firm that hackers had gained unauthorized access to a CPA firm. And the CPA firm only found this out when its clients started saying, listen, I just went to file my taxes, and the IRS told me that my taxes were already filed, and I never did file my taxes. This is a big problem, and why we're encouraging everybody to get your taxes filed as soon as possible. Basically, it's the only way to find out if somebody else is filing in your name. And you talk to law enforcement, and the bad guys will steal the data that we're talking about right now, and they'll literally go up and set up shop in hotel rooms, and police will walk in and they'll find 6-7 laptops on tables, on beds, and the bad guys are just filing one fraudulent tax return after another using the free hotel Wi-Fi. File the tax return, and they disappear. We had a lady actually working for Better Business Bureau. She had gone to file her taxes. She knew she had to pay. Here's why she knew she had to pay. She had been an entrepreneur in the past and had run into some tough times, and the business failed, and she owed money, and she was making good on paying that, and she had got behind in the taxes as well. And in the process, when she went to file her taxes, she was told her taxes had already been filed, and somebody had claimed a $70,000 tax refund from the IRS based on her account because she was over 60. She knew she owed. And her Social Security number had been stolen. So this is happening to people all over, and we're seeing it on a regular basis. So I look at a website that is constantly chronicling these and keeping a last up-to-date, up-to-the-minute report. And so I just recorded my screen as I rolled through these, and you can start to see who's impacted. Lots of healthcare, but ultimately it is millions of records as you go through and see the number of people impacted on a daily basis. So that's why when I said go through and go turn to your neighbor and say you're probably the victim of identity theft, that's why it's happening to billions and billions of people around the globe on a daily basis. And it is incumbent on us to be aware of that and not succumb to some of what's going on between our ears. Because how many of you are saying it won't happen to me? And you don't have to raise your hand on that one. But there are a few things going on between our ears that I'm going to wrap up with this morning that really put us at risk. And it's something that is part of the human condition. Our brains are actually wired to make us fall for scams. Hard to believe, but we're going to go through that in a moment. But for 1 minute, I just scrolled, and all of this is, we're still in March of 2017 of data breaches that we've seen hitting people in the United States. So it's serious business. Hopefully, if you've got a Yahoo account, you're one of 500 million people that have had their accounts hacked, and we just don't want to be the proverbial ostrich with its head in the sand. They really don't stick their heads in the sand. That's just a term. But it gets the point across on what we're up against. Now, if you're still thinking, this doesn't impact me, I don't have to worry about this, here's the deal. We know that from the most recent studies that every single record lost costs a business $158, and the average breach will cost a business $4 million. You think about Amalgamated Sugar now having to pay for identity theft protection for all of its employees. If you price that out recently, it's $20 to $30 a month. And there is, of course, the reputational impact. Do you want to be known as that business that lost important information? We took a look at credit union data. How many of you are with a credit union, member of a credit union? So the credit unions asked all the credit unions in the country, survey, how much do you spend recovering from theft and data breaches on an annual basis? It was about $250,000 per credit union and 1,600 hours recovering from those thefts. So out of this, I've come up with a little theory, and I'd like to have you test my theory with me. But if you knew that you had to go immediately after this and do a job you don't like to do, let's say you had to dig a trench in your backyard, and I gave you a 5-minute option to get the trench dug, and I gave you a 5-hour option to get the trench dug, which option would you take? I'd say you take the 5-minute, unless you really like to dig trenches. So we want the easy way out of the hard work. So for the scam artists who are operating out of these call centers, really, you can go to school off the street in places like India and China. You can go to school and learn how to do this, hack in and steal information. It's still hard work. They've got to make the phone calls. They've got to read the scripts. They've got to convince you to give up personal information. They've got to sit there and try to guess your passwords and hack in, and they're writing the code to make that happen. So the hard work theory is the bad guy is just like me in that he wants the easy way to get the job done. So let's not give him the easy way to get the job done. Five things that we know to be what I call the five-hour person, what you need to do. Number one, check your credit report. And this is for you personally. This is for your business. It's across the board that we've got to take specific interest in protecting ourselves. New research, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday or over the weekend where businesses were starting to see a shift, and businesses are starting to spend more money responding to data theft and a hack than they are spending on prevention. And that was alarming to me, that we're willing to see all of our employee data get into the hands of a thief and just pay to clean it up afterwards than we are to take the steps to protect the individuals and to protect our business reputation. So the first thing to do is annualcreditreport.com. Really important that you don't search for this in Google. Don't just open up Google and start typing free credit report in a search, because I'll tell you what will happen. You won't end up at annualcreditreport.com. The bad guys have that one all figured out. So you've got to type annualcreditreport.com into the URL, into the address bar of your web browser in order for this to work. And then once you get to the screen, this is what it's going to look like. If your screen does not look like this, then you need to go the other way. And how do I know this? Because I got a phone call. You have a presentation like this. A lady called me the next day. She said, Dale, I did exactly what you said to do. I typed in the name of the address that you gave us yesterday. I went, and the first thing it told me I had to do was give a credit card and pay $30. And then I had to pay money for every time I wanted to see my credit report. I said, wait a minute. I said, where did you go? She said, well, I typed in exactly what you said to type in. I went to annualcreditreport.org. I said, no, I didn't say .org. I said .com. So every single letter, especially that three-letter extension on the end, very important. You're going to look for annualcreditreport.com on the website. And then here at the very bottom of the screen on the left side, it says request your reports. You will have the opportunity to choose three reports: Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. What we like to recommend people do, and if you'll consider, is to look at just one report once a year, every 4 months. So if you were to go home today and do this, you could choose one of the three: Experian, TransUnion, Equifax. Let's just say we're going to choose TransUnion. We're going to look at our TransUnion report. We're going to look for anything out of the ordinary. Then we're going to come back in 4 months, and we'll choose Equifax. Look through the report, anything out of the ordinary. If there is, that's a sign of identity theft, and we need to take action. And then we'll come back and we'll look at Experian. So every year we're looking at our free credit report three times, and then we just repeat this cycle over and over again. Folks in the back, we've got lots of seats over here. Just come on in. We're just having a conversation. Please, make yourself comfortable. Next, online review of accounts. And this one is really important because I got this from a fraud investigator at a bank. We were at a conference together, and I said, so tell me, what do you do to protect yourself? And he said, well, let me start with my morning routine. He said, every morning I get up and I have a bowl of plain oatmeal and dry whole wheat toast. That's the thrilling life of a bank fraud investigator. He says, as I'm eating that bowl of plain oatmeal, I look at all of my online accounts, my active accounts. I crack open the laptop and I log in and I look at each account. Now, super important, you do this from a secure connection. You're not going to a coffee shop and using free Wi-Fi to look at all of your active accounts, your bank account, your credit cards, and you're looking for anything out of the ordinary. How many of us have heard of the Target breach, the Home Depot breach? We go through the list that I just showed you, and they have learned, the bad guys have learned how to plant viruses on credit card readers. and they siphon off credit card numbers continually. So in order to protect yourself, you've got to be watching. And the banks have a lot of really good protections in place, and they're watching this stuff constantly. But it takes all of us being vigilant all the time in order to put the bad guys out of business. So we're watching those accounts. Now, next on our list of being a five-hour person, we are not answering every single phone call and then calling the person back. And I know this one's a struggle when we're in business. So I will answer the phone at my office if I don't recognize the phone number. If it is out of state, if the caller ID shows an out-of-state area code, I'm really suspicious. And if I answer that phone and I hear less than a second of silence, I hang up. If it's really important, they'll call back. Here's why I hang up. The bad guys use robo-dialers, computers that are either guessing phone numbers or importing phone numbers from every database available. And that computer just sits there and dials the phone hundreds of times an hour. As soon as it connects to somebody, i.e. that 1 second between the time I answer, it will port that call to a live operator, scam artist, who's sitting there at the cubicle farm, headset on, computer in front of them, listening to my voice. And based on the age that they think I sound and how I answer the phone, they have a series of scripts in front of them that they will launch into. So if I sound a little older, it could be the grandparent scam. If I sound younger, it could be a lottery scam. It can be a business. If it's a business number that they know they're calling, it could be a Yellow Pages scam. Hey, you've not paid your bill. It could be jury duty. It's any number of things. They have scripts that are constantly evolving, and they're constantly tweaking and making them better as they figure out what works and what doesn't. It is a data-driven world, and they are constantly amassing data to make better decisions, just like we do in our businesses and in our homes. And so they're using that information. So if I get one of those phone calls, I miss it. If they leave some cryptic message, I don't call back. But I'm really skeptical about what's happening on the phone. And they're calling all the time. So this is the fraud call from the IRS. It's a computerized voice, so it's computer generated. And I know a lot of people on this phone call issue say, I know, but I'm on the do not call list. Why do they keep calling? Okay. We're dealing with criminals here. Expecting a criminal to abide by the do not call list is like expecting a bank robber to drive the speed limit in the getaway car. Not going to happen. So they're not following the law to begin with. They're looking to rip you off. A robocall is illegal to begin with in the United States. Can't do it. So if you get a robocall, a computerized voice, you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it is a scam, and you can ignore it. Next on our list is delete. And this is so important, especially from how we started off this morning with email. The bad guys are constantly figuring out how to get something into your inbox, into the inbox of your employees, and get them to open it up. And they've created fake web pages for account logins. They capture information all the time. They are relentless in getting this. And once they get into your email account, they can read those messages. They'll figure out who's who. We all have signature lines in our emails that give our position. They can go in and track the messages, see where the communication is taking place, follow the strings of communication, and then they just interject themselves and start making requests on behalf of leaders in the business. And so it's really important that we have these conversations within our companies, within our families, about the importance of deleting any email that causes just a tinge of curiosity. Curiosity is the biggest weapon of the scam artist. If they can get you curious about something, willing to click a link, open an attachment, say yes on a phone call, they have you hooked. So curiosity is the big one. And it's not that tinge of suspicion. It's the tinge of curiosity that we have to be aware of as individuals. That's where they get us. And these are all great curiosity creators. So your computer's been locked. This is a favorite one. They tell you that you've been caught looking at illegal porn on your computer. They steal all of the logos from the federal government. So there's a Department of Justice logo there. All the text reads very well. They've gotten really good with their grammar, and there are some specific logos across the bottom to make it look more official, and basically they tell you that your computer is locked. And people will pay this, and there are pop-ups on computers all the time. It is a cat-and-mouse game. The bad guys are just staying ahead of the antivirus software. The antivirus software is trying to stay ahead of the bad guys, and every day the bad guys figure out a way to get ahead. And it's up to us as individuals not to fall for it. And finally, be skeptical. So what does be skeptical look like in this day and age? Well, I'm skeptical of my phone calls. I'm skeptical of the emails. I am concerned about the integrity of my system at work, my computers. I'm sure that my Wi-Fi at home has a very secure password. And then as I'm out and about running my credit card, I'm skeptical of my surroundings. So this is surveillance video in a McDonald's drive-thru. And this one's interesting because the employee has his own credit card reader in addition to the credit card reader that's at the kiosk in front of him. So if you look really carefully, this will replay. He's going to take the credit card, he's going to run it through the company's, and then he's going to pull his own out right here and run it through his credit card reader.
Like a bartender having their own register in a bar, right?
Like a bartender having their own register in a bar. Or it could be just as easy as this. So these are on sale on eBay right now. You can, for $48, buy your own credit card reader. So if you have employees who are taking credit cards from customers and you own a business, this is where we need you to be vigilant. We ask you to be vigilant and put protocols in place. Restaurants. If I see an employee at a restaurant take my card from the table and disappear with it, I get really worried. And if they disappear for a time, once again, that raises my level of skepticism. So put payment kiosks out in the open where they're easy to see by management and by the customers who have entrusted their credit card to you. I was talking with the owner of a Quick Lube shop in Boise, and we were talking through this. And in his shop, you stay in the car while the oil in your car is changed. And then the employee comes up and takes the credit card. He said, we have a rule in our shop that as that employee takes the credit card from the customer's hand, that card goes right up in the air, so that the customer can see it the entire time. The employee can only drop it down to run it through our credit card machine, back up in the air, and straight back to the customer. There's no take it from the customer, make your way over, oh, I forgot something, lay down the counter, none of that. No, it's customer, air, reader, air, customer. Very defined pattern and system for handling credit cards. Got a question?
Does the chip reader help in this process?
Great question. So does the chip reader help in this process? So if you want to take out your credit card and look at your chip-enabled credit card, I've got mine right there. There's the chip. Look at the back of that credit card. See the magnetic strip? All the information that is on the chip is on the strip. So we'd love to think that the chip gives us a level of protection, but it doesn't because we've got this thing which can be read by that thing. Yes.
I was at Walmart the other day, and they were saying it took like 2 minutes for the person from their card to get read by the chip, and they hate it. It takes so long to read the information on the card.
Yeah, so the question comes about the length of time it takes to read the credit card, and yes, we're very impatient. We want to be able to just slide that card quick. When you insert the card into the chip reader, what's happening is there's a secure connection between that card reader and your bank. And the card is creating a unique identifying like 16-digit number that matches a unique identifying 16-digit number from the bank that's encrypted. Those two meet, they look at each other, say, yes, we match, and then allows the transaction to take place. If they look, if those numbers look at each other and say, we don't match, the transaction can't take place, and they know they've got a stolen credit card. However, as long as that magnetic strip is on the back of our cards, it really doesn't matter. We're still able to have our cards swiped. And now that the chip is on the cards and they're trying to move us away from the magnetic strip, the bad guys are working overtime. And that's why this is so easy to find. Gas pumps, another great place for us to be skeptical. So how many of you have seen tamper-evident tape on a gas pump? Tamper-evident tape on a gas pump.
Where should it be?
Where should it be? Great question. So, when I look at a gas pump, I come up, I look at this area here, and usually the tamper-evident tape is going to be over something in this area where you insert your card. I'm going to look for a key. There's a key slot here. And I am going to look at all of the screws and bolts on the front plate of the gas pump before I slide my card. So I'm looking for broken tamper-evident tape. I'm looking for that key slot if it looks like it has been mangled. And I'm looking for missing screws in the faceplate of that pump. All of those would be warning signs that that pump has been messed around with. And then I don't want to insert my card. And I never use a debit card at a gas pump. Only credit cards. So that created a bit of a challenge back in the day when Costco started selling gas. You remember that? And they only accepted debit cards. So I always ask questions. And before I filled my car with gas, I knew I had to use my debit card at Costco. I called the attendant over and I said, tell me, how do I know that your pump is safe for me to run my credit, my debit card? Because I had input a PIN number. And he said, well, let me tell you. He said, every night before we go home, we put new tamper-evident tape on the gas pump, and we cover up those seams or the cracks where the plate would come forward so it breaks. And it's a piece of tape. It's usually colored, it's usually red, and it has numbers on it. Sometimes it'll have like that hologram image on it so that it's very unique and specific. And it can't be peeled off. And when it breaks, it tears in it with a very jagged edge. So that's tamper-evident tape. He said, so every night we put new tamper-evident tape on. Every morning we come in before we start the gas pumps up and we look and we inspect the gas pumps. I said, okay, you've taken steps. I'm confident that you're going to protect me. But when I pull up to a gas pump, I always choose the pump that's closest to the front door of the gas station so it's in line of sight, less likely to be tampered with. I will opt for the gas pumps that are in line of sight of a video camera, surveillance camera, and are well lit because we know the bad guys like to come in the middle of the night and find the darkest out of sight gas pump to start putting these skimmers on. And if you don't believe me, just go to YouTube and type in the search bar credit card skimmer and you can watch video all day of credit card skimmers being found, being planted, see how they do it on ATMs, on gas pumps. Every time before I run my card at a public place, I grab a hold of this unit right here and I give it a good tug. That place where you put the card, I just give it a good tug. Super easy to take the parts from the credit card skimmer you can buy on eBay, dismantle that, build your own skimmer, and just place it on the front. And make it look exactly like that. And you can do it on ATMs. You can do it anywhere you want. And so it's happening all around us. And if you just do these five simple things, keep them in the back of your mind, you make yourself much more protected and harder to get to both personally and in your business. Now, talking about your business just really quick, you'll notice that the stories I told at the beginning when we played the game, have you ever, that there were some where the data had been stolen and had been being stolen for 3 years. that they found out about it and then waited until March to talk about it. If you as a business learn that information has been compromised in your database, it's been stolen, somebody's walked out with a hard drive, somebody's stolen paper files, if you learn that, you have to act fast. This is not about saving face. This is about doing the right thing. And so often in these reports that I've shared, you see these long periods of time where the business finds out, does its investigation, and then sits on the information for 2 or 3 months. You know what's happening for those 2 or 3 months? Your employees, your customers, that information is getting bought and sold on the black market and used over and over again. So you might as well slap a customer or slap an employee in the face. They would probably rather have you physically slap them in the face than let their social security number, date of birth, address, phone number, email address be bought and sold in the black market multiple times, exposing them and basically ruining their lives. They'll find out that somebody's filed taxes in their name, somebody's bought houses in their name, tried to take out medical loans in their name. The list goes on and on. So it's incumbent on a business to be transparent and alert authorities and get the process moving as soon as you discover a data breach in your business. So important. It's the great paradox. It is the best way to protect your reputation. Trying to hide it, it will come out. I guarantee it will come out. Getting it out in the open, daylight is the best antiseptic. It's the best way to protect your reputation as a business. Yeah, Lee.
Dale, have you heard any fallout from the Idaho Fish and Game data breach that took place last July?
So the question is, the data breach at Idaho Fish and Game, and any fallout? I haven't heard of any more fallout. I know I received the letter because my information was part of the data breach. So somebody got in and stole all the records from the Idaho Fish and Game Department's third-party vendor who was holding license information. So if you hunt or fish, or if you ever had a hunting license and you bought it online, all that information you input got in the hands of the bad guy, meaning we've got to really watch. And I haven't heard of any more fallout, but it's out there. And a great point in that, when you are a victim of identity theft like that, you get the letter in the mail. So many times, and Emily can attest to this, we get phone calls at Better Business Bureau from people saying, I got a scam letter in my hand. It says that I'm a victim of identity theft from this breach, and they'll give us the breach, and we know about the breach. And it's part of the process. It's not a scam. It's the real deal. Accept the protection that's being offered in that. Train employees through this process and talk about it continually. These need to be conversations you have constantly. Listen, accounts payable, I'm never going to send you an email with a large bill to be paid without a very, very specific explanation. And if you ever have a question about anything, pick up the phone and call. Don't just blindly follow what you see in an email. Here's what's going on. Share the stories that you see in the newspaper, that you hear on KBOI. Share those in the office so that every single employee is on board with you in keeping their own information safe and the information of your customers safe as well. If you're in business, especially small business, you must have 2 computers, plain and simple. And here's why. The first computer, at least 2, I should say. You must have at least 2. You have 1 computer for your email, your web browsing, all of that stuff. You have 1 isolated computer for your personnel records, your taxes, and your bank accounts. And you are never, ever browsing the internet, opening email on that computer that is designated and isolated for accounts and private information. Because that's a great way to create that internal firewall, so to speak, and protect yourself. Now, why do we do this? As we wrap up with just a few minutes, there's a lot of brain research out behind the reason we as human beings fall for these scams. Because we're all sitting there saying, it will never, ever, ever happen to me. So the first thing, and you've noticed my slides don't have words on them, but we're going to go through these really quick because the biggest problem we have is people accepting the fact that I am my own worst enemy. Me, Dale Dixon, I am my own worst enemy. And these are the reasons why. Here's the deal. My brain, I mean, everybody have a cell phone? I don't have my cell phone with me, but raise your phone up. When's the last time you got an update on that? They're constantly pushing updates. Whether it's Google or Apple, they're constantly pushing updates to your phone. The technology between our ears hasn't gotten a firmware upgrade. So that's why this stuff is so important to recognize so we know how to protect ourselves. So the first is motivated cognition. It's that unconscious tendency for us as individuals to process information to meet a conclusion that we want, that I want. This stuff happens, I mean, it's been proven in the lab over and over again. So they took a group of Ivy League college students to figure this one out. And here's what they did with those Ivy League college students. They set the students, based on their university, in a room, and they showed them game film of controversial calls. Football game, controversial call. When those students saw a controversial call in favor of their team, woo, yay! When they saw a controversial call that was not in favor of their team, boo! They processed the information based on the conclusion they wanted. We do it all the time. So the information comes in, scam artist calls us. We process that information based on the conclusion we want out of it. Then we've got selective perception. This is another nasty one that gets us, but it's not near as bad as the one that's coming up next. So this one is, we only notice those things that fit our process, that fit what we want, and we forget about negative stimuli. Bad stuff makes us feel bad, don't want to look at that. I'm going to process and only accept in information based on what I want. And then we've got the optimism bias. Now, we need optimism bias. It's something we need. We need all of these things. But with optimism bias, it is that little thing in our head that says, oh, nothing bad's ever going to happen to me. I can click on this email. I can enter my information. I'm safe. My virus protection is up to date. Nobody's going to make a phone call like that into Idaho. I'm in Boise. Nobody's going to target me. It's all optimism bias. So we've got these three things going on between our ears. Me, I am right there in the middle of it. I deal with these on a daily basis in so many areas. But see, the scam artists love technology and they love psychology. And they're really smart and they study this stuff day in and day out, over and over and over again, and they are constantly practicing they look at it as a craft. It's an art form for them. And they're constantly practicing and using data to get better. And every conversation they have with a potential victim just gets them better for the next conversation. So all of that comes into play and makes us all potential victims. And that's why we all have to be hyper-vigilant in this day and age. And if there's just one thing you walk away with today, I want to be more aware of my surroundings. So I want that to go through your head. I want to be more aware of my surroundings. Whether it's on a screen, it's at a gas pump, it's when you slide that card or give that card, or a conversation you have on the phone. I want to be more aware of my surroundings. And with that, I can answer any questions. Yes? So the question is, how deep can you go in opening up an email? And every email app is different. Application is a bit different. I don't know them all. So I'm an Apple guy, admittedly. And I use something called Spark to read my email. So every email application is a little different. The biggest problem with email is clicking on links in an email and opening attachments in an email. Unless you know beyond the shadow of a doubt who sent it, why they sent it, and what it contains, don't open it. Don't click on a link, don't open an attachment, and just hit delete. If you can pre-read the email and see what's going on, but if there's a message and the message is nondescript, doesn't give you anything specific, then that should say, oh, it's causing a bit of curiosity in me, I'm going to hit delete. Pick up a phone and call the sender. If you don't recognize the sender, great excuse to hit delete. If it's really important, the person will find another way to reach out to you. It's more important that you protect yourself and your systems than risk what's going on with that link, what's going on with that, I'm going to answer this one over here. Andy.
Just a quick one. So when you get that call, you know, from somewhere in the country and they call it back, and this number is no longer in service, whatever. What's the, you know, obviously you're like, oh, somebody's trying to scam me. What's the deal with that, though, downside as far as calling back?
So the downside of calling back is that if you call back, you had really a two-part that's important. If you do call back and you get a message, this number is no longer in service. So that's important to remember. We're going to get to that. Number one, the problem with calling back is most often you're getting called by a robo-dial. When you do call back, you're confirming that your number is real and legitimate. So your number, you've just added about 5 cents of value in the hands of the scam artist to your phone number in their big database. And they'll take that database and sell it. So you think about the exponential impact if they've got a database of 1 million phone numbers and they can say, we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that 750,000 of these are accurate, times 5 cents a piece. They've just grown the value of their database. So when you call back, you're confirming that your number is real to the scam artist and increasing the value of it. So that's number one why we don't call back. Number two, when you call back and they say number disconnected, well, the bad guys are churning phone numbers constantly. The moment a phone number is figured out to be a scam-related phone number, they just turn it off and use another one. And it's all, everybody in here, you can try it yourselves. Go to Google Voice and get your own phone number. I did it myself. I thought, I'm going to try this out. I'm always talking about it, so I'm going to see just how it works. It is so easy. Go to Google Voice, say, I want my own phone number. I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool to have a New York City area code phone number that spelled my name? I had it like that in under 5 minutes, and it was completely free. Bad guys are using the technology all the time. It's technology and psychology. So they'll get a phone number, they'll crank it up, they'll start using it, they'll show it on your caller ID, or they'll put any number they want on your caller ID. People like to say, well, here's the number that was on my caller ID. And it's to the point now, I've had these phone calls so often, I really don't care what number's on your caller ID. Doesn't matter. Does not matter. I can put any number I want on your caller ID. I can put a Google Voice number on your caller ID. I can use caller ID spoofing, and I can put Ada County Sheriff and the Ada County Sheriff's number on your caller ID. So the caller ID is just a little lie box that sits there next to your phone. If it's a number you don't recognize, create some skepticism. Yes?
What about the insurance behind all this? You know, you can pay so much a month, it won't guard you up for $1 million and blah, blah, blah. And then the other side of the coin is, I have people get a hold of me and they want to buy my product for twice the price. I'll play along a little bit. I say, sure, go ahead and send me a list. We'll send you 50, 100, 200, a batch of people's credit cards, all the information. I'll call that. It's usually all the same, MasterCard, American Express, whatever. It's all the same credit card company. I'll call those companies. Try to get into their fraud prevention or whoever's, you know, who it is. I get two or three out, and they don't care. They don't care. They don't even want me to mail that list to them.
Yeah.
So the insurance end of this must be pretty crazy, too.
So the question is insurance, and then also what happens with orders. So insurance, have a conversation with your insurance agent. Hopefully you have an insurance agent you can trust. A lot of what we talked about is what is offered in LifeLock and things like that. But there is an insurance component so that you're made whole based on the amount of time you spend and any costs incurred in recovering from a data breach. And that is important, and I would encourage folks to look into insurance for that. As far as what to do about orders, if you're in business, you've probably gotten the fake orders, or they want to order a lot of whatever your product is, and then they turn around and give you fake credit cards. It happens. So be suspicious of those. That's another opportunity to be skeptical. Your point that when you call and you try to do the right thing and call fraud protection, and they say, we don't want the list, we really don't care, it's because this is so pervasive and it's happening so often. So every day our banks get thousands and thousands of compromised credit card numbers in basically spreadsheets. And they run those card numbers against the card numbers in their system. And this is just a system for fraud alerts. And I'm guessing all of you have had a credit card replaced, right? Anybody not have a credit card replaced? You're unique. Mine gets replaced about every 2 years, I think is what it ends up being, because it's compromised. Compromised at Home Depot, compromised at Target. So the banks are looking, and they really rely on those lists. And they're just running the list against their own database of credit cards every day, and that's what they depend on. And it's an automated process. The moment it finds that a compromised card is in their database, that person has their credit card shut down, notified, and they've got to get a new card issued. So it's part of this constant game. It's part of the expense that we're all paying, and why it's incumbent upon all of us to stop it, to prevent it, by being a five-hour person. I'm going to go here, and then Nate's standing in the back, and I can hang out and answer questions if you need to wrap up officially.
With the Yahoo breach, what happens on the NatNet?
Yes.
I've been compromised. How do I start fighting?
So the question is, what about Yahoo? You're part of that, you called it a mess, it is, what do you do? So most important is that you are constantly updating and changing your password. If I had a Yahoo email account, I'd be changing my password every couple of weeks. And if there's any way possible, I would get away from Yahoo. Yahoo is constantly being hacked. I don't know what they do as far as security, if they do anything, but they can't get it right. So they're always being hacked, and that's why we've got 500 million records being compromised. So if I were in your shoes, I'd recommend you consider getting a different email provider and get away from Yahoo.
Yeah, but they won't even let me get back into it because it's been hacked, and they changed the password. I haven't used it in about 5 years, but how do I know what they have to be able to get out of that account?
So, you'd have to operate under the assumption that they have everything. That's the safest assumption at this point. Yes?
My question is, you mentioned that the big rooms that have the people doing all of this scamming and so forth, what's being done about that? Is there any law enforcement activity pursuing these people and all of that?
So the question is about the big rooms I mentioned and what's being done to put an end to that. Well, there have been some attempts. We know that the CIA, Secret Service, FBI, all the federal agencies teamed together and said, we've got to get our hands around this. And they started globetrotting, and they saw how big the problem was and that there was no way they could even make a dent in it. I mean, it's so beyond whack-a-mole. And so it's basically throw our hands up. Same thing with the bank. And we really don't care. We're just figuring out how to mitigate damage. So the federal authorities inside the U.S., they don't have a lot of say what happens outside the U.S. There was a great article in Wired magazine a couple of years ago, and I didn't save it. I thought it would always be there through the link, but they took it off their website. But it was called Hackerville, and it's about this little city in Romania. Anybody been to Romania? So I've had a chance to be to Romania. It's cool. We drove through the country, and you drive through, and it is like stepping back in time. And you'll see these little huts with grass-thatched roofs and the little old European lady standing out in front with a dress down to the ground and a broom in her hand and chickens feeding around her feet. And this article talks about this, driving through Romania, and then coming around a corner, and there is this brand new steel and glass, ultra-modern Mercedes-Benz dealership. And it's sitting on the edge of town. And you get into town, and the streets are filled with these either hyper sports cars, ultra luxury cars, and 30 to 35 year old guys driving them around town. And you walk in, and there's internet cafes all over the place. And there are two investigators in this town who are trying to take down all the hackers. It's all illegal activity. And they've got resources for two investigators. And they're so swamped and overwhelmed, there's nothing they can do about it. So, long story to the point, law enforcement really can't do anything about this because it's global in nature, it's technology, it's psychology, and it's whack-a-mole. And that's why I keep coming back to, and I started with personal responsibility, the only way we get this stopped is for us to do what's on the screen, to take responsibility, and to not let them get access. We put them out of business by not giving them our money, is what it boils down to. There's a question over at this table.
Well, I just comment that I get these phone calls, and I answer, and nobody there, but they verify that the phone is the real number. Or other times, I call back, an 800 number, and I get a busy signal. So that's probably a roto-dial thing that keeps dialing.
Yeah, don't call the numbers. We encourage people not to call those numbers back. Really important.
But even when you answer and there's nothing there, they verify that it's a real number.
Well, that's why I hang up in that first second. I mean, when I see a number come in on my caller ID that I don't recognize, I'm really skeptical. And I am, that phone gets to my ear, and if that person's not talking, click, hang up. If they need me, they'll call back. Nate, I'll hang out and answer questions.